You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap?
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. I'm your host, Parisha, and my co-hosts this week are Joyce Mollenhauer in Arizona, Marianne Love in Melbourne, Australia. We have Geraldine Dalby-Ball, who is also in Sydney, Australia, and we have Rosemary Heyer in Frankfurt, Germany. And we have Trina Cooper, who is actually somewhere in one of the major suburbs around Denver. So we have some co-hosts that are pretty well around the world in some places, and people who are listening in from all over around the world. So we're very happy to actually start a new book with you this week. And we're moving to start and actually discuss our startup today with Code to Joy. And this is a book that's written by George Pratt and Peter Lambrou, who are both PhDs, with some additional comments on it from John David Mann. I've actually had the privilege of meeting George and Peter, and they are very much right on what unlocks the keys to happiness in us and exactly what it is that we can simply do. One of the things that I found, in fact, the book that I'm holding is actually an autographed book from George and Peter, okay? And what actually excited me about it is it's very non-threatening, okay? It says, the four-step solution to unlocking your natural state of happiness. You know, that how much better could it be? Like, steps one, two, three? So this is one, two, three, four. That's all right? So, and I like what it says on the inside cover. Instinctively, we all know this is somewhere deep inside. We all know what it's like to feel a burst of delight. Every one of us has at some point in our lives experienced a sense of ecstatic joy, of euphoria, at the very sheer sensation of being alive. Have you ever wondered why that experience has to be so rare and fleeting? The answer is, it doesn't. And that's actually what the authors of this book set forth to do. So I'm going to actually ask Joyce Mollenhauer in Kingman, Arizona, to actually start with the introduction and help us get some background here. Actually read the foreword that was written by Larry King. Joyce, are you there?
Yes, I am. And what's interesting about this foreword is that Larry King actually experienced this process with good results. So I'll tell you about it here. The 20th century had its share of medical miracles. I should know. When you've survived a heart attack, had quintuple bypass surgery, and you're still going strong a quarter century later, it gives you a pretty healthy appreciation for modern medicine. Still, there are some aspects of the human condition medicine cannot touch, or at least it couldn't until now. Modern medicine has made us a lot healthier, but what about happier? That may be where the frontier of medicine lies in this still young century. And one of the undisputed masters of the new frontier is a clinical psychologist named George Pratt. The first time I met Dr. Pratt, he was a guest on Larry King Live, talking about a fascinating approach to healing our emotions and creating lasting improvements in our productivity and sense of fulfillment. Whether it's an unresolved hurt, persistent low self-esteem, or a vague sense of anxious unease, said Dr. Pratt. Most of us struggle with some version of what we call the fog of distress. It clouds our lives, interfering with our relationships, our careers, and even our health. And no matter how many hours you spend on the couch talking it through, just doesn't always do it. Why not? Because there's typically a disconnect, he explained, between what we logically know about ourselves and the place in the brain where our emotion lives. Sometimes you just can't get there from here. You have to find alternative ways to get that information to click. Alternative ways like what? Like energy psychology. If you've never heard the term before, you're not alone. Neither had I before that show. But in the years to come, you and I will be hearing about it plenty. It refers to innovative techniques that affect the body's energy systems, almost like a 60,000-mile tune-up of the thoughts and emotions. Using these techniques, as my distinguished guest explained it, you can clear out the past trauma and events that created those disconnects in the first place. The result is something like what happens when a fresh wind blows away the clouds. The sun comes out. Actually, he added, it's a pretty easy thing to do, and it works. Dr. Pratt has helped pro golfers and ball players improve their game, jilted young men and women get over heartbreak, estranged couples get their groove back. He has helped people get past the trauma of terrible accidents, restart faltering careers, recover lost self-confidence, and move past irrational fears. He has even helped one talk show host I know, me. Even before we had him on the show that first time, I knew a little bit about this good doctor. He had worked with two people on the Larry King live show, and they've gotten fabulous results from those sessions. Soon I had him on as a guest again, and this time he talked about creating your own joy. Now, I was really intrigued. We set up a time when he could give me a private demonstration of the approach you're about to explore in this book. So we had something to work with. I described an emotional issue in my own life. What he did with it in the 15 minutes we spent together blew my mind. To say it was impressive would be a crime of understatement. It was remarkable. When he says it's a simple and easy process, he's not kidding. When he says it works, he's not kidding there either. George Pratt is a true modern-day healer, and what he and his colleague Dr. Peter Lambeau have created in the pages you're about to read is a brilliant formula for tapping into our highest potential. I predict it will change many people's lives for the better, including yours. Whatever is going on in your life, whatever is keeping you from being as successful, as productive, as flat out joyful as you'd like to be, there's a path that will take you there. I know, because I've experienced it firsthand. Larry King.
Thank you very much. That's very good. I wanted you to read that because we need to let our listeners know there's quite a few people that are texting me saying that they can't get the book. The book is, you can get it on Amazon, and it is still on the shelves in some, like in Phoenix, it's on the bookshelves in a couple of the major bookstores. And that the exercises in this book, in reviewing this book, not only in the meeting, I can tell you that George makes it sound as simple as clicking your fingers to work through these four methods. And like Larry has shared here, just talking to him and him having him run you through the four steps. I mean, he does it very, very quickly, asking just a number of what I call soft velvet questions, nothing that makes you stop and get kind of threatened by the question. They're all very easy, fast to answer questions, and he just bam, bam, bams you through that, and all of a sudden you have the answer. There's just the answer just comes. And in most cases, as we will learn as we go through the pages, the answer comes from something that you've buried so deep you haven't even remembered or thought about it for God knows how long, if ever. And then all of a sudden, as he's asking the questions, all of a sudden, there's this little pop-up, like what happens on your computer screen. It's just this little pop-up, and you wonder, what is that? What, how's that related to anything I'm doing, right? But then out of it comes such a clear fast answer to unlocking and releasing a whole lot of programs, a lot like just frameworks and years of doubling over into the framework. So actually getting you on these exercises. When we do the books and actually read from the books and bring the books to your attention, it works for you to actually get the book. And what I would ask of you is something was brought to my attention by actually a study group, an Edgar Cayce study group that actually is following us, that buys every book that we study and works along with us. And afterwards, what they do is write the outcome of the book. Like on the front of the book, they actually write the things they've accomplished through the book, so that they take the book and they give it to thrift stores and everything else where people can actually buy it and pass the book forward. In fact, that's the term they use, pass the book forward. And in passing the book forward, they actually share some of the revelations of what they experienced, and they share their name and their either their Facebook or their if they have an email. The point is they're willing to actually meet people and talk to like-minded people. I thought that was so cool. So I pass that along with you. But like I said, in this book, because it is 4 easy steps, you really want this book so that you could have the exercises. And I would like to see a lot of you help, self-help coaches and life coaches actually take this very serious as how to quickly get to some results in the many facets of how you work with people. This is actually one I would recommend. You want to get these in shape, especially in the fact that we have Marianne Love, who is a therapist in Melbourne, Australia. Definitely, this is something that gets the door open real fast and gets you right to the other situations you want to look at. When we're looking and we actually want to be successful in life, one of the first words that you hear is actually wealth, that we are seeking success in wealth. Well, wealth is far more than just financial success. I mean, you cannot talk about wealth without thinking rich, and rich means money, right? We all know that. That's okay. All right, but to say that you're rich and that you're unhappy, to say that you're rich and to know that your health is worth nothing, okay, there isn't any happiness in it. I have in my lifetime met a tremendous amount of extreme, not just wealthy people, but extreme wealthy people. And they're not happy. And in the maybe first impression that they want you to have, they do a lot to make people think that, okay? I read aura, and I also see with the mind space. So I see through a lot of that right from the beginning. But I watch how perfect everybody's got their stage front ready to give that impression that everything is just fine now, that they're very wealthy, they're very high esteem, so forth, so forth. Is it worth anything? Because in their heart, they're very sad. They do not look forward to the sunrise. And as the sun sets, that's when their insomnia starts. So when you're looking for the fact that there's just some very simple, clear-cut processes that will actually cut right through what that wall is, then you know that happiness is actually the real wealth. Happiness. I've met happy people who actually are surviving far better than some of these extreme wealthy people on $10,000 to $20,000 incomes a year. They see life in everything. They see happiness of life in everything. They have appreciation of that. They feel connected. And when we don't have those things, there's just one place in our life. Something closed that door. Somewhere, you let somebody take that away. Somewhere, just the innocent or the angry immediate slam of somebody's comment or everything, especially the children. They're so very vulnerable that when parents tell them they're stupid, or when parents are constantly making issues out of things that they don't do 100% in that, you're actually programming this child. For the first 7 to 9 years of our life, we are in a hypnotic prepared state, which means we actually move around in our wakeful hours in a very suggestible mindset, meaning whatever's being put in is actually what's going to fill the cells of our brain and make us the person we come out to be. So if we're constantly being scolded, constantly the only comment we hear is what we've done wrong, not what we've done right, those things are still buried very much in there, okay? And so when we come to being very successful, especially driven people, sometimes they're driven by the fact that they're trying to overcome that, but they don't even know that that's what they're trying to overcome, that they really only overcome it when, like through these four simple steps, they find out where it was actually first planted. And it never makes any sense. I've seen this 100 times or better. And George and I had some lengthy conversations that this it never makes sense what it was that totally destroyed the other end of the accomplishment. The success is empty without the happiness, without the fulfillment. And it's all about something somewhere said very recklessly or carelessly that suddenly we took in some vulnerable way of ourselves, and being in a hypnotic state, we accepted it, and it become part of the hardwired brain that we have by the time we're 25, 35 years old. So this book goes through a lot of that. George's stories and everything takes us through that. So it's really, really to your benefit to make sure, even if you have to wait, that you make sure you have the book. And so actually make your notes. I really like the Edgar Cayce group that's making their notes and actually sharing the results that they had from things. Or some of them said that they didn't really get the results that others did, but still, all in all, that sharing gives a little more meat to the book. So with that, we want to move forward with that. Okay, today we're going to actually cover the introduction, and actually doing this, we're actually buying time for you to get the book, for you to get out and get it mailed to you. I understand right now it's still taking almost a week for Amazon, who is usually 24, 48 hours in your hand, that it's taking a week because of the slowdown process that we're going through right now. But all the same, get the book. And actually, as we discuss the exercises, actually then go back to them and do your own writing and journaling on them so that we can move forward with that in a very specific, clear way. I wish you all happiness. To me, your happiness guarantees that you will infect 1,000 more people with happiness. So as we begin to look at that, let us feel our responsibility to making sure other people know about it and get the word on it. I'm going to ask Marianne Love to actually start with Marianne in Melbourne, Australia, to start with the actual introduction we have here, which is titled Stephanie's Question. Marianne, are you there?
I am here. Thank you. Yes, so okay. Stephanie's question, he starts here with saying, something is not right. And it's a quote by Miss Carvel in Madeline. And Stephanie represents a story, I think, that a lot of people can identify with. She's a woman in her mid-50s. She's done everything right, really. So she's sort of worked her way up to become a CEO in a company, had been really successful. She's married with 2 kids. Like, she's done it all. And yet, she's really, really unhappy inside. She's unhappy. And I guess maybe the community would or wouldn't know, because she's pretty active in the community. She's really generous. And yet nothing seemed to shift this unhappy state that she's been living in. Even going to psychiatrists, being on antidepressants, nothing changed for her. And so this chapter invites us to ask the big questions about why would someone who had seemingly had everything be so unhappy and not able to shift their internal state. And that's true for a lot of people. Like, a lot of people would ask the question, why am I anxious? Why can't I never get into a good relationship or never find the work that I enjoy? So this chapter really shares with us, you know, this idea that even in like the most healthiest society, probably time has known, like we're so well nourished, you know, we've got so much, and yet there are so many people living unhappy. And, you know, why? Why would that be, is the question. And so that covers this section.
I thank you for that. And being a therapist, I'm sure you run into people who will actually say to you, I have everything. I don't know why it's not working. I don't know why I'm unhappy. I think that if I actually ask for the common ground on that, I think in a week's time, I hear that from several people. I don't know why I'm not accomplishing it. I don't know why. I don't know why I'm not happy. I have this wonderful partner. You know, I love my job. You know, I love the fulfillment of it. I have my beautiful home. I have everything that I could want. I just don't know where the sadness, the aloneness, the unhappiness is. And they immediately, some of them, at least the ones I get in touch with, some of them are on antidepressants and they don't know why. And it's like, this is why this particular book stood out to me so much, especially after last week and the couple of weeks before we were working with Barbara Shear's book, I Could Do Anything If I Only Knew What It Was. Okay, this being follow-up, here's some steps to find, actually help and continue to push you to the direction of finding the discovery of what it is so that you can resolve it. And what I like about what Dave does here and what you're sharing, Marianne, is that In the fact of brain research and the wonderful work that he's done there, he actually explains that there's the part of the brain that we have that actually is stimulated because of that hypnotic state that we're in from the ages of birth to 7 or 9, that actually is continuing to override a whole different story. You know, the story is all the circumstances shows the proof that your life is perfect. It's everything you want, but you're not happy. So then you have to come back, and the question's very valid. You know, something is not right, because the success should be happiness. And so when we go to answer that, we need to really look for the fact that it's up to us to do the work, ask the questions, get the answers, and move to a process that actually brings us to that is not spoken anymore, that which is not even remembered and not in frontal lobe. Okay, I'm going to ask Trina Cooper there in Denver to come on with us and discuss what follows up with that. Trina, you on?
I sure am. So glad to be here tonight. So right now we're still in the introduction, and he asked a question about, or says something about, this issue has something to do with how water turns into fog. But that was interesting. He gives a lot of good stories for you to understand. So he said, imagine just being outside your home and you look to the left and the right and you're completely engulfed in fog, totally surrounded. So this fog is about an acre around and a meter high. And he asked the question, how much water do you think actually creates that much fog? And the answer really is just a few ounces. It wouldn't even fill an ordinary water glass. And he says, how is that possible? So there's a description here. When water evaporates, it condenses into these little teeny minuscule droplets that permeate throughout the air. So in this 1 acre, he's saying about 400 billion tiny little droplets suspend there. And it completely shuts out light. It completely shuts out the warmth and completely envelops you. And he says, this is exactly what happens with painful or difficult experiences. Human beings, he goes on to say, are mainly very adaptable. But sometimes things happen that we suppress, especially when we're young. We have experiences we can't get rid of, and even though they may seem completely insignificant to the people around us, and they may even be something that we've completely forgotten about, they kind of condense into these tiny little billions of droplets of anger or negative feelings, guilt. And it's like a suffocating blanket that completely engulfs us. And we don't even really know it's there. He calls this the fog of distress. So we walk around in our life and we feel kind of like Stephanie, like I'm just not happy and I don't know why. Or I feel really nervous and I really don't know why I feel nervous. And so these things kind of hang in the background. He gave the example of like the refrigerator noise. We kind of just ignore it after a while. He said, what is this fog of distress actually made of? It's part feelings and part beliefs. And it's partly subconscious and partly bioelectrical. So it's actually has to do with your body as well. And you can think of it as interference, almost like static on the radio. It actually lies outside the domain of our conscious mind and our logical reasoning thinking. We just know something's not right and we can't quite put our fingers on it. So sometimes this shows up in very specific ways, very dramatic ways, like an irrational fear or anxiety. But other times, like Stephanie's, it's just really vague. And we just have a sense that something isn't right and we can't put our finger on it. So that explains why, even though Stephanie used all the therapeutic drugs and went to counselors and all kinds of things, it didn't work because they really weren't dealing with this reason or logical analysis. This fog doesn't lift from that. And the last piece he says in the section is, imagine trying to reach an underwater cave by driving around the city streets. No matter how long you drive or which route you take, you won't get there. You actually have to get out of the car, get off the streets, into the water, and swim a different route altogether. He said that's really what we need to do ourselves, is to get off and try a different way of finding what's going on. And that's really what this whole book is about. The path exists. He's going to lay it out for us.
It's real good. Thank you very much for that. Also, the fact is that because we haven't dealt with it and we don't know what to call it or the name of it because we're not doing the processes that reveal that, we actually start building on them. We actually start creating more. I like how Ron Hubbard's group, the Scientologists, actually work with the process here that we're actually seeing how. An example will be as a child, a four-year-old child, you're walking with your parents, loving and playing and everything, and all of a sudden a nasty dog comes out and tries to bite you. And from that point on, you have an impact with that. And so from this point on, you're going to be terrified of dogs, but then you're never going to be relaxed about walking and actually being holding your parents' hand and walking about very freely. So then along comes another situation that we attribute, the fear clicks in on that situation. And then we start building frames of supporting that original trauma and impact. And that's exactly how the layers of trauma happen, is that one thing connects it to the other, to where you just start having this chain of events that actually goes back to this first impact and trauma. And by the time we're in our success mode, probably anywhere from 20 to 50, where finally we achieve success, okay, there's still the reactionary process to that, and we keep adding to it. To where once, as George and Peter here go into what they do, it actually shows they're just slowly taking you backtracking through life's timeline. And actually coming to the point to where that impactful moment, that trauma, actually began. And then as that is actually voiced and talked about, like what we do here in these exercises we'll be doing, it's just how amazing the brain just resolves all of that. It's like if we could put you under some wires and some probes and stick them in your head. And I have seen this, okay? And we come to something like that. The whole chemistry of your brain makes a really impactful change. And therefore, the chemistry of the brain and the body actually releases this And at that point, you see all kinds of new chemistry start showing up. It could even be detected in a blood test, because we've done blood testing to actually catch it. So this is how important what we're getting ready to look at here is all about. So definitely you want to get this book. Okay, can we have Geraldine, and you're in Sydney, Australia, down there. Can you hear us and can you talk?
Yes, absolutely, to both. I can hear and I can talk.
That's great. All right. Share what you got.
And the first part is where they mentioned the fog. And as it's just been shared there, that fog, as we heard, the fog can come from a tiny piece of water to make a huge fog. And as we heard, it might be a seemingly tiny incident of a dog coming out and barking, but it sets up a pattern that then future experiences that are similar to that lock into. So what we start looking at now, and as they go through the book, is what they're saying, four steps to clear this. The four steps are described as identification of that, which might be identification of that first incident that happened. Identification of the limiting belief that happened because of that. The second step being to clear it. The third step being to repattern. And the fourth step being to anchor in the new repatterned information, because this is so key, so that there's a new normal. So if we go back to that first step of identifying, it's that moment where one might say, hey, if I was to put a laugh meter or a smile meter up in my day, how many times am I actually laughing or smiling a day? And if there's more rooms for smiling and laughter, then this book is for you. So irrespective of where you're at in life, what they're really talking about is how to regain or how to just create more delight, because there's the acknowledgement that to be on earth is about being happy and healthy and experiencing joy and love and connection, contribution. So anyone who would like more of that, the techniques in the book are great. To find the joyful you. So the first bit, addressing the fog, finding out where it's from. So there's a whole two chapters that help you find where that initial part came from, where does the current fog came from, and very importantly, how to dissipate it. There's a section that talks about energy psychology. I think it's interesting that they use the word that it's cutting edge. And when we think of cutting and on the edge, we're really talking about getting things gone. What we're also talking about in the definition of cutting edge is it's not the ordinary. And so they're taking us through techniques that are not ordinary. And here, what I love is seeing that mix of what one may classically call Eastern and Western philosophies, which are coming more and more aligned today, and ancient wisdoms have always known it, that synergy between the energy of the body and the thoughts. And they actually bring up, and you would have heard it from Joyce earlier, the energy psychology. And the definition of that, it's really a mind-body approach, or what they call bioenergy. So it's the life force of energy in our systems. You may know them as meridians, you know, energy lines. It's how good do you feel when you go for a walk. You know, it's that approach of looking at it all together. It's shared that they've done 45,000 treatments and got really good outcomes, lasting outcomes. And that's massive. So that's about the identification. Then moving through the chapters, they look at clearing. And again, that's using the body, using the thoughts, having that ability, as we said, to get off the highway driving around and go in under and get to that cave. Then we've got the anchoring of the new thoughts. And again, multiple techniques. It really is a doing book. The multiple techniques are the ones that anchor in the new belief and the new thought forms. And it's sharing again, but you can have these moments of being in the driver's seat of your own life. So really you create a new story. And that's very much through chapters 5 and 6, take us right through that. Chapter 7, excitingly, unwraps the layers. So the more stability you have, like building a house, the more you have that general joy when you wake up, much like I recall myself, and, you know, even just looking at young children, remember the rubbish truck comes past and they go to the window and, you know, get completely excited that there's the garbage truck with all its noise and flashing lights early in the morning. To have innate joy as your starting point, everything becomes easier. So this allows us to then keep unwrapping layers. And I can say personally I found that as well. I can think that I'm doing really well, and then some layers come off and it's like, ooh, okay, I was really hiding some things there. Now that the layers are off, I can actually see. And then when you see, it again, there can be that little pulling back for a moment going, well, that's not as good as I thought it was. But then you have enough energy that you can tackle it. And then the next layer comes off and it's like, wow. So that's what we really taken through with chapter 7 and 8, that ability to unwrap the layers and have daily practices, because that's really what puts it in place. So to sum up, the book is going to take us through practical exercises, other people's case studies, because when you see someone else can do it, there's a definite feeling of, well, I can. So we're going to identify, clear, repattern, and anchor so that joy is our normal operating place. So it certainly doesn't say that to feel any other emotion is not correct. It is totally correct to have your full range of human emotion. What it's allowing us to do is not have what Mum might call a mis-emotion, or, you know, a sorrow when it's not a sorrowful present time moment. So it allows you to have the general starting point of joy.
All right. Very, very good. Very good. One of the things that I have used for years that this represents is I see the unfolding of the patterns and what each chapter gives us a step, another step of the four steps he's talking about, is how Dr. Phil years ago wrote some books on self-help and self-awareness. And his favorite tool was to use a timeline. And this is exactly what it is that we have to do, is that you can actually go through on your own and just draw a line and think as best you can different times in your life where there are impactful events. Wherever you start, no matter if it's when you were this age, that age, you'll find yourself going forward and backwards. You'll start remembering back and pick things up as well as you go forward. And what they actually do in this four-step process that they do is actually stimulate that. You get on that timeline and you actually go in one direction or the other, but eventually it'll take you to where you run the whole gamut from birth to the present state in the now. And that's where you actually find where all of the pit holes are that you've kind of fallen in, and no matter how successful you are, you know that you're not feeling fulfilled and happy. So that's all good. I'm going to ask Rosemarie Heyer to finish us out on the introduction here and tell us what to expect from Chapter 6. Rosemarie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Basically, as I said before, the core is really the four steps. Identify an event, clear it, repattern it, and anchor it. And so in Chapter 6, he's actually showing us the anchoring steps. And I like about the book also that also at each chapter, at the end of each chapter, he's actually making a summary of what you have to do. So it's really done very practical and easy to use. In the anchoring step, you're basically making sure that the results you got are really deep and long-lasting. And he's using in the anchoring step and also in the third step where you repattern your beliefs, he's not only using a mental imaginary or working on positive beliefs, but he's basically, as Geraldine shared, very much integrating the whole body-mind system, what he calls the biofield. And so when you are working with beliefs, or when you are working with anchoring, you are also working with your acupressure points, you are working with your meridians, and you're using certain things on your body to really implement what you are doing. So I really like that, because I have been using energy psychology, and I had really immediate results. I was using it to create an intent or to release some kind of anxiety I had for an event I was going into. So I'm excited to get back to it, basically, with this book. You're not only learning to create new beliefs mentally, like you said, oh, well, I did that one, but you're also learning some physical things to do, so you are really moving into the chemistry of your body, into the electrical patterns the beliefs have created. And we all know that we have physical reactions with our anxieties, and you can actually change it. And he says it also at the end of the book. Basically, what's very exciting for me about the book, and he keeps repeating that, he says at the end of the book, when Stephanie left the office that day, the dark cloud was gone. So it's also not a long lasting for weeks and months process. When you get it mastered with this book, you can get immediate results. And I like that a lot too. So that's basically what I wanted to share at the end.
That's real good. And you did a good coverage of what we get in six. So it makes me even more eager to hurry up and get there, right? So again, I stress, please get your book ordered. They are available. You can get them on Amazon. You can call ahead in some of the bookstores in the major metropolitan areas that might even still have it. It still maintains a level of popularity, even though it's been printed some time back. And so looking at that and seeing where to go with where you want to take into light. As we begin to cover the chapters, I like the actual beginning of where we find ourselves on chapter one, where it says an interview with yourself. What do you do with the mad that you feel when you feel so mad you could bite? When the whole wide world seems to owe so wrong and nothing you do seems very right. It comes from Fred Rogers from the neighborhood, the little program he had for the kids in the neighborhood. And so he gives an example here that I've used, because I've worked with this book with youth and young people to give them some simple understanding to get them more or less out of the bag that they're in right now when they're anywhere from 13 to 20 years old, and actually stop some of the what I would consider waste of life trying to deal with the unspokens and the unknowns and get them clear on that. And this is one I've shared for a long time, and I get lots of laughter and fun with it. You're walking through a field, munching absentmindedly on a snack. The sun is out. The air is balmy. A light breeze at your back. Life is good. Suddenly, you hear an earth-shaking crash. Startled, you look up at the horizon just in time to see a gigantic plume of ash and dust volcanoing up into the sky and spreading out to form a gigantic cloud that will persist for days, weeks, perhaps even years. It will blot out the sun and completely change your world. Chances are you will not live to see it dissipate. Thank you. And then he says, oh, one more detail, you're a dinosaur. And this opens the mind of the young people so well. This little comment, oh, no, by the way, another detail is you're a dinosaur. And it's like when we look at all that we're facing, especially to me, this stood out for what we're looking at in our world today. We've got people that are being very much taken with the virus and the sickness that we have. There's not, I don't want to minimize that in any way, shape, or form, but it's also the fact that whatever number we're looking at, there is much, much more of the population that is whole and doing well. Then we look at the fact that now we're having to deal with the fact that there's an asteroid coming at us around April 28th, and we're not real sure because NASA's vague as to whether or not how close it's going to come and the effects it's going to have. Well, see, what I know is the earthquakes are already its effects, and it's pretty far out there, still a week or so away. So, yeah, there's going to be things. And when we look at them, to be prepared is to actually know where our particular programs are with our fears and with whatever it is that undermines our strength and our logic and our intelligence. And right now, just looking at what we're looking at, to stay in a place to where you know, even to the last breath, if that's what it's going to take, that we stay positive to the fact especially all of you that are listening to this radio show and to what we share all the time. You know, how can you possibly fall victim to all of the madness, the insanity, and the constant regurgitation of the fact that figures aren't matching? They have the conspiracy people who are pointing out all of the actual hidden shady things in the reports or whatever. Whatever that is, and however you fit into that, it's your world that you have to work through with this. And going into these four steps gives you an anchor to actually be in the best of places in whatever the circumstances. Because whether it be the flu or it be the asteroid or whatever, there are people who have those kind of effects in their life that are devastated because of a divorce, that are devastated from the death of a parent or a close one, that are devastated that they got fired. Their world could not be any less than the horrendous wave of things that are challenging us right now. They give up. Their spirit is low. You suffer. You don't know how you're going to get past that. I mean, I work with people who actually will look at me and ask me to pray for them to die. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to help you see the other side of this, because on the other side, there's so much more for you to see. So when we're working with this and actually dealing with what it is that causes those cataclysmic earthquakes and whatever that could possibly be feared, where is that in your life? And what more horrendous could it have that you have put your whole heart into something and you've done everything that it takes only to realize that in the final moments of it, you do not have the happiness that you thought you were pursuing? So we can face that now with what we're learning and what the book is showing. And in chapter one, right, as Rosemary shared, at the end of each chapter, he does, so where do we go from here? And he sums that up and he moves you right on through it. But here's the other thing. You can't just read this book. It's like Rosemary said, actually doing what you need to do. As each one of my co-hosts has actually shared perspective on this, it's still about you taking the paper and pen, writing it out, rereading what you're writing, letting yourself just open up. And it isn't that this will work for you because you read the book. It's that you did the book. It's not something that you can just read. It's something you have to do. So with everything that we're doing, and listen, the co-host and I have been working in our particular area of life, it's life coaching and everything else. We're constant at this. The reason I've asked him to be my co-host is because our work connect so much in a great association. So it's a daily thing. It is a breath by breath thing for us. It's not what we do. It is who we have become. And I don't care what that is. And I can tell you, I don't sit second seat to many. But I would still do this. I mean, the first time I met George and everything that I heard and through him, I actually saw the connections that was made through a lot of very high motivated coaches and self-development people. And I saw some of them that were so arrogant in whatever it is they had to say, they couldn't see anything to be had in the simplicity of what George and Peter put together here. And I watched them do all their dynamics, and I mean, you know, they got up there and did a real good show. And I watched how George just politely, and he's not like a real impactful person, just a very genuine person. And I watched how whatever the hoopahoo was before him, after he just puts those four steps in place, you saw the audience react. You know, it wasn't a sale job. They weren't being sold something. They weren't being gimmicked in any way. They just simply realized in him these little processes that he did actually in those few minutes in a massive audience. There were revelations. This is how good this is. And right now in all of our lives, we need to be looking at where it is that we can maintain what we know, especially all of you students out there of positive thought, and knowing that you actually have to get in control of yourself and what you have to do to actually work through your situation. You're going to like this book. It's going to come to you and be very much part of what you stay on your shelf. And if not, please pass it forward. Make sure somebody else benefits from it. So as far as the co-host does, is there any, some of you I know have read ahead, is there any part of chapter one that kind of moved you that you felt actually was a door opener?
Yes, this is Trina like in Denver.
Okay, and go ahead.
What I really like is how simple he makes it. He gives you really simple suggestions of things that maybe may have happened or what pops in your head or you hear yourself thinking or whatever. And just reading through this, it was amazing because it's like, wow, and an idea or a thought would come up for me and I'd have to jot it down. And then another one, it was like, wow, there's another one. Okay, things I haven't thought about, things that didn't present, you know, that I haven't thought about in years. So it is simple. And if you really want to get to the bottom of it, like me, who still, after all these years, it's like I was in a place completely shut down, no clue why. I still, even with all the work, I can feel that emotion inside of me when the right sentence or the right words come up. I can feel the emotion start coming up. And that's what really makes his work amazing, is that he puts it right in front of your eyes to draw it out of you. So it's very cool.
But have you not actually, some of you, in looking at this, what I've experienced in playing with this, because like I said, I've been kind of on this book for quite a while, and what I found in definitely in what I'm revealing, sometimes people who know me very up close and personal will actually say to me sometimes, so why do you like that? You know, what is it that you enjoy so much in that? And I really wouldn't know. I really wouldn't know. You know, I couldn't say them it's because or, well, this or that. I didn't know. And as I was going through it, I started finding out where my love of different things is at. You know, we're all as an individual as our fingerprint is different, okay? And so I've never had to think I needed to understand why it is I can have, I can entertain myself better than anybody, okay? I can just go out into my garden. I can go to places. I can just find joy forever. But there's some of it, especially like my children and that, you know, they'll go, well, that's just mom's thing. You know, she kind of gets out there on that. It's a little bit weird, you know? And it's like, so there would be actually times when people would ask me, I would feel that weirdness. It's like, I don't know how to explain how come I like that. Like, I love the sound of water. And I don't care if it's just water running out of a faucet. I love the sound of running water. And as a child being raised in the forest and wandering around in North Carolina with grandmother, many times when we'd come to sleeping overnight somewhere, we could hear the brooks running and the water running. So whenever I've been asked that question, I would immediately go there thinking, well, it's just these happy memories, these, you know, whatever. And then I started realizing, well, while that water sounded nice, tracking up that mountain was no happy experience, okay? And going through whatever it took to get to wherever we were going wasn't exactly, you know, strolling down the lane there, you know what I mean? And so I looked at it, and I really realized that more than anything that come back, what come up for me? And it may sound a little complicated for you, but what come up for me is my birthing waters. I remember that somewhere in was probably a past life regression or some of the other things I do when I do hypnosis and meditation, but I could hear water, like volume, like I was inside the water, and how when you're in water, you hear volume. You don't know you really hear anything here. Right? And in that, I could hear the actual trickling of the water itself. And so I had this really impactful moment of actually being inside the womb in the water. And in that, it helped reveal so many things between my mother and I. I mean, just something simple like that, it just keyed off a whole slew of stuff. And when I finally, I grabbed, you know, the pen, started writing it all down and didn't look at it for a couple of days and come back to it. And I actually found myself crying. Because it helped bring to me such an understanding of my mother that I had never ever really had any any direct experience with, like thinking about it, talking it through or anything. And it was in those moments, even though she's passed, that I actually took a moment to key in with her and actually tell her how rewarding it was to actually see what all it took to get me into the world and to get me up and going in the world and what it was that she had to do that. So you can expect that this is going to take you to so many different places. I would have to say, though, I think I am a happy person and everything. I can tell you one of the places in my life that there was still and would always be questions was my relationship with my mother and the fact that I was raised by my grandmother. And it's like, you know, I had already dealt with rejection and all those other things. Nothing like that come up. This come up, the water, the trickling of the water. And so in that, like I said, you know, don't try to analyze it and make it come to some place where you are expecting an answer that maybe you've already decided on. All right. Let it just, let it hit and let it come. Let it be exactly what it is that can bring you the answers that allow you to have absolute, positive, total success with happiness. Is there anything else that anybody else wants to share in the few minutes we have left? Did anybody read ahead in chapter one?
Yes, this is Marianne. I absolutely love this book because this is the field that I specialize in and I'm fascinated by. And what I really liked the way you shared in chapter one was how even really small things can cause a ripple effect that can seem big later on. So like a lot of my clients will say, well, that wasn't really very bad, or they'll sort of more go to logic, like, no, I had a good life, like nothing really happened to me in my life. Like, but then when you dig just a little bit, you find that in the emotional center, this stuff is stored, and it could have been a really small moment, you know, or a moment they don't even remember, like pre-4 or pre-3. And just what a big, massive impact these unconscious stores can have. And I think he describes it really well in chapter one.
I agree. And it's those moments, and I'm sure that definitely in your field you're working with that. It's in these moments that when you go back to it, it was such a casual situation that had such an emotional impact. And it's that emotional reaction of what we turn on ourselves with it that actually brings in the situation where we just keep adding on the different frames and the different layers of that till it itself doesn't even show anymore. It's just a number of other things. So I'm very happy to see that you're all excited about moving forward with this. I want to play with this and have a great time. So we're going to close today and actually hope that you guys all prepare yourself with we're coming up with what we call new moon meditation. It's on the new moon each month, and at 7:30, wherever you're at on the planet Earth, that you actually take a moment with friends, and at this point when we're not being suggested that we go in groups, wherever you may be, to take a moment at new moon and actually think about the world that we can dream and have the exact reality of happiness. And so we ask you to check out our website, look it up, and that would be the I'm going to let somebody else that's got the words for that to check it out. But please check it out. Be with us on the new moon. And for what's coming and all that is in the works right now, know that your kindness, your smiling, and the benefits, the wonderful things that are changing, and that we are seeing the other side of this. So say your prayers and be well. Keep yourself very much in a safe way. And respect all that's being asked of us to do. And most of all, be considerate and kind to everyone you meet. There's always a choice. Meanwhile, have a great week. We'll talk to you next weekend. OCO.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.